I Eat Green with Bhavani Jaraf, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And I have a very exciting show planned. I have a guest today, Jonathan Bloom, who is the author of the book American Wasteland. And we will be talking about the waste that goes on in this country and what we all need to know and what we can do about it. And I will introduce him again in a little while before he comes on. But before that, of course, I have recipes for the holiday season to share with you. And I just want to talk a little bit about what's been going on in my circle and in the news. This past week, Food and Water Watch, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization really out there trying to protect our water and food system, they had a rally on Long Island to raise awareness about the problem behind fracking. And fracking is an issue that is so prevalent today that we all need to educate ourselves about what it is and what we can do to help let our congressmen, our governor, our senators, everybody know that we do not want it. There's nothing good that's going to come out of it. There's only negative side effects. And, you know, they will say, well, it's, you know, creating jobs, but there's many other ways of creating jobs, and the jobs that those are creating are not worth the lives of the people that they will interfere with. So let's all band together to ban fracking, and that rally on Long Island was a great start. We only had about 50 people there, but it was 50 people that really cared, and we had speakers that shared their insights into fracking, and it was really a wonderful group effort. And Sam Bernhardt, who's the local rep for Food and Water Watch for the Long Island area, did a wonderful job recruiting people there, so I wanted to thank him. And on Wednesday night, Slow Food Huntington screened the movie Dive, which is so appropriate for my guest today, Jonathan Bloom, because the movie is all about dumpster diving and about the waste in this country and about how much food is thrown out. And I'd say half of the food, research has shown, it's not just me saying it, that half of the food that is made in this country ends up in the garbage. And it's got to stop. We just can't afford to do that. It's not sustainable, and there's people that are hungry. And so if we all work towards food recovery, and the book American Wasteland talks about how you can do that, also the movie Dive helps us. And I have a great story to share with you. Yesterday, the Tuesday before most holidays, I cook for a group of less fortunate people through the River Fund Food Pantry, which is a food pantry in Richmond Hill, Queens. And so this was our Christmas event. And it's, you know, a lot of fun. People get together to cook. We cook for a couple days, and then we serve people out in Rufus King Park. And as you know, we did Thanksgiving that way too. But anyway, I try to spread my favors around, so I had contracted with a local bakery to pick up their leftover bread, as I've done every year for the last couple of years, at the end of the night. So I went to pick up the bread from the bakery, and when I got there, what usually is like three big plastic garbage bags full of bread, they gave me one small kitchen-size bag of bread. And this is the bread that I turn into garlic bread for the event. So there clearly was not going to be enough bread. And I thought, oh, God, what do I do? Do I go out in the morning and buy new bakery fresh bread and spend money that I don't really have, or think a little bit more creatively. So I called Whole Foods. I had the number in my car. Called Whole Foods, asked for the bakery department, spoke to someone, told them my story. They said, let me get my team manager on. I got a wonderful team leader from Whole Foods. Her name was Megan. And she heard my story, and she did the right thing. She said, well, the store's closing at 10. If you're here by 10, I can give you all the leftover bread. So I went there. I was there by 10. And I actually was there a little early. I had to wait a few minutes. She gave me all the bread that was not going to be able to be sold the next day. And I said, what do you normally do with it? And if someone doesn't pick it up, they compost it, which is better than just throwing it out. But they basically, you know, put it in their composter in the back of the house. So instead, I walked out of there with four huge boxes and at least five shopping bags. That had to be 100 loaves of bread. A lot of the bread was not garlic bread type of bread. Some of it was, you know, rye bread and pumpernickel bread. So a lot of the loaves we just gave out to the people going through the line and gave them a loaf to bring home with them. But most of the bread I turned into garlic bread, and it was so great. There was so much, all different sizes, all different shapes, lots of whole grain bread. So it was really good quality bread. And, you know, that's what food recovery is about. I recovered that food and kept it from just being trashed. And 400 people enjoyed that garlic bread. So it was really wonderful. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we all can do. And one of the organizations like City Harvest and Island Harvest that focus on food recovery and go around to different stores to pick up, their biggest challenge is getting enough volunteers to go around to these different markets for them and pick it up. So that's another place that people can volunteer. You can call these local organizations. I would think most cities have some organization that's involved in food recovery, and volunteer to go and pick it up. Food Not Bombs, who is a wonderful organization that serves many needy communities, they pick up from Whole Foods on a regular basis and from other local stores and bakeries. So they just were not picking up the night that I happened to call. Lucky for me. So anyway, all of you, that's just another place that you can get involved and volunteer, and that's a wonderful thing to do. There's a lot of great events coming up. There's a whole series of carbon farming courses taking place at the Pfeiffer Center in Chestnut Ridge. And the Pfeiffer Center is basically a biodynamic farm and learning center, but they are also renting out their space to lots of sustainable agricultural people to give workshops for this course. And so if you're interested in that, get in touch with the Pfeiffer Center in Chestnut Ridge and find out the schedule. And there's also the NOFA Winter Conference coming up towards the end of January. And it's from the 20th to the 22nd, and there's, you know, over 80 workshops there, three keynote speakers. It's a really great event. I was there last year and would be there again this year, except I will be teaching cooking at Rancho La Puerta, which is a wonderful spa in Mexico. So for any of you that are listening who would like to take a little vacation in Mexico from January 21st to the 28th, there's great workshops going on there as well. It's a wonderful, wonderful spa. I was just told that it was written up in Travel and Leisure magazine as the top spa of the year. So I will be teaching a series of three cooking classes there. So if anyone has the means to take a vacation and you know, join us at this wonderful spa retreat, we'd love to see you there. And there's a rally going on for No Food, No Farms, or No Farms, No Food rally in Albany on February 15th. And then I want you to save the date, February 24th, Just Food Conference in New York City. And later on the next month, April 14th, save the date for the next Long Island Small Farm Summit. That's sure to be another wonderful event. Last year, Joel Salatin was our keynote speaker. This year, we are branching out. We have two keynote speakers. One is Will Allen from Growing Power in Milwaukee, and he'll be talking about all the urban agriculture that he's doing and his aquaponics and his composting. When I heard him speak, you know, every other sentence was, it's all about the soil. And I know I've mentioned that on the air before, but it really is all about the soil. So Will Allen will be our keynote speaker, and then... Hi, everybody. I'm so sorry. We had some technical difficulties there. I was just telling you about the second keynote speaker that's going to be at the Small Farm Summit, and that is Chef Ann Cooper, also known as the Renegade Lunch Lady. And she helped to revitalize and turn the Berkeley School Lunch Program in California into a much healthier lunch program, and she's in the process of doing the same thing in Boulder, Colorado. And she's going to come here to Long Island and give us some inspiration. And I would love to be able to take on some of her work and get into more schools here on Long Island and improve the school lunch programs there, because we all know that they really need help. So there's lots of ways that we can all take action. One of the main things I want to remind you all about is the Keystone Pipeline, which we were so excited last month when we heard that President Obama was really putting it on hold while a better evaluation of the environmental impact study could be done. But now the Republicans are trying to push it through and attaching it to the tax break piece of legislation that they're trying to rush through and attaching it. So Obama's getting a lot of pressure to push this Keystone Pipeline through, and we all need to call the White House, call the White House, let them know, send letters, send emails, but we really need to rally together and keep this pipestone from happening. And what else? And that's pretty much it. There's a lot more going on, but if you want to get my email, please. Every week I send out a newsletter that has all these things listed on it, of things that you can do to take action, of upcoming events. Send me an email, bhavani@ieatgreen.com, and I'd be happy to add you to my email list so you, too, will get this weekly notice of all the best things going on. Of course, it's focused in the New York area because that's where I am, but I am very open to putting things in the newsletter from around the country. So if you have important information that you'd like to share with me, please send it my way. So the recipe I want to share with all of you, since it is, yet last night was the first night of Hanukkah, I want to share my potato pancake recipes. And I have three different varieties here. They're basically the same, except sometimes instead of using flour, I use chickpea flour, which makes it gluten-free. I also sometimes substitute the sweet potatoes or carrots into the potato latkes as well, so that it's just not as much starch as it would be if it was all potatoes. So let's start with the basic potato pancakes, which can be made either with matzo meal or flour, depending on the time of year, so this recipe can be adjusted for the Passover season as well. But you want to start with 1 cup of matzo meal or flour, 4 organic onions cut into slivers, 12 organic potatoes grated, and then you can squeeze the water out. Or another very wonderful tip that I can share with you is if you grate the potatoes ahead of time and put them in cold ice water, that helps them to gets some of the starch out, but it also makes it so that it absorbs less oil when you're frying them or baking them, whichever you decide to do. So that's a nice thing to do with it. But when you're ready to mix it into the batter, squeeze the water out of it. With that, I use 4 organic eggs, a tablespoon of salt, and then oil for frying. And so in a large bowl, you're going to make a batter with the eggs, the flour, and the salt. Then add the onions and the potatoes. And then another key piece to my potato pancakes is I do not form them into nice little patties. I drop them by the spoonful into the hot oil so that they almost look like crab legs. You know, there's just, you know, pieces of onion sticking out, pieces of potato sticking out, so they're very free-formed, but it creates more surface to get crispy when you're frying it. So it's really great that way. Another thing that I've been doing lately is also doing it in the oven. If you heat a cookie sheet in the oven with a little bit of oil on the cookie sheet, you can either use spray or I actually put a little bit more oil than that, and I, you know, either canola oil, vegetable oil. If you use canola oil, make sure it's a GMO-free canola oil, because most of the canola oil is genetically modified. And then you do it at a very hot oven, like 450, and get the oil on the cookie sheet hot first, and then you just drop them, again, by the spoonful right onto the cookie sheet. And you can do them pretty close together because they do not need space to really expand, and fry them up. When they get golden on one side, turn them all over, and then let the next side go. And it's a great way of doing it. You get them done all at once. You don't have to stand by the, you know, the wok while you're frying them up, and they're less oily, and they still taste great. And you serve them with applesauce or sour cream. So if you want to do sweet potato instead, you can still use, just substitute the potato for sweet potatoes, or you can do this recipe that I'm going to share with you right now. This is 1/2 cup of chickpea flour or another gluten-free flour, 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda, 5 tablespoons of cold water, 1 small onion, 1 potato grated, 1 sweet potato grated, 1 carrot grated. So this has onion, potato, sweet potato, and carrots. 3 tablespoons of cilantro, and that can be left out if you're one of the people that do not like cilantro. 1/2 teaspoon of cumin, 1/4 teaspoon of ground red pepper, also optional, 1 teaspoon of salt. And then the same thing is with the regular potato pancakes. You can either fry them up or do them on a baking sheet in a hot oven. And I usually do 1 and taste it and adjust the spices so that I can make it more spicy or saltier. You know, it's hard to get the exact saltiness down in a recipe. And then if I wanted to do pakora latkes, I call them, which are potato pancakes, but in Indian cooking, these are very similar to pakoras, which is an appetizer. And you start with 3/4 cup of chickpea flour, 1 teaspoon baking soda, 1/2 cup cold water, 1 large onion, 2 potatoes grated, 2 carrots grated, 1/4 cup of cilantro, 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1/4 cup of red pepper, 1 teaspoon salt, and you process them the same way. You fry them up or put them on a cookie sheet. These, if you'd like, instead of serving with applesauce and sour cream, you can serve it with like a tamarind chutney or some other mango chutney or something like that. Okay, so that's it for the recipes. Because of our technical difficulties, we're running a little late, so I really want to introduce you to my guest now. Jonathan Bloom is a journalist whose work has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Boston Globe. His book, American Wasteland, looks at how we waste food from farm to fork and examines the impact of our squandering. In his blog, Wasted Food, Jonathan writes about why we waste food, why it matters, and what we can do about it. He lives with his wife and son in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Jonathan, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks
Great.
For having me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry that I'm running a little late. I hope you weren't waiting too long.
No, no problem. I was excited to get some recipe ideas for those latkes.
Oh, they're great. They're really great. And we post the recipes on the website, the prn.fm website. So if you didn't get them because I was talking a little fast, the recipes are available online. But, of course, you can send me an email. And this goes for everyone listening. You can send me an email if you need a recipe. I'm happy to share. So I wanted to first ask you, how did you first get introduced to the problem of waste? When did that awareness come to you? How did it come to you? And what inspired you to write the book?
Well, I grew up in a house where we really loved food, and I learned to respect food as something that brought families together. We always would have that communal dinner at the end of the day. So I had that background, and then I began writing about the idea of food and how it's something we really look forward to as a journalist. But the experience that really galvanized my interest in food waste was this day that I had at a place called DC Central Kitchen, which is a food recovery operation kind of like the ones you were speaking about at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I had an opportunity to be in the kitchen observing all that was going on and all these foods that had been rescued, foods that otherwise would have been thrown out. And I couldn't believe how nice everything looked and what high-quality foods they had saved. And so the epiphany I had that day was, well, what happens in cities and towns that don't have that kind of food recovery group? And how much food is slipping between the cracks in America?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in journalism school at the time, and this was the perfect topic to start digging around and researching, both because I find it fascinating from an environmental perspective, an ethical perspective, but also because of that love of food. And it just simply doesn't make much sense to me. It doesn't sit well to have a country where we have so many hungry people and we're throwing away so much food.
Right. Right, I know. Did you see the movie Dive? Have you seen that
yet?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I had a good chance to talk with the filmmaker, Jeremy Seifert, and it's. I find that the topic of dumpster diving is really appealing to folks because I mean it's just so eye catching.
Right.
The juxtaposition of hunger and food in dumpsters.
Right. Well, it's really great. Like you were talking about, if you can get to the food before it actually makes it to the dumpster, if you can make relationships and partnerships with these places so that you can recover it before it actually goes in the dumpster so it doesn't have to be so unappealing sounding.
Exactly. I mean, ideally, we shouldn't have to be digging through the trash to get food when we're throwing away about 40% of all the food that is grown in the U.S.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's one word for it.
Yeah.
Sad, staggering, shocking.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of adjectives.
Well, what do you do with the knowledge that you have right now? Are you teaching? Are you still working any type of food recovery projects?
Well, so I'm at a bit of a crossroads. I started the project as a journalist, and I've slowly transitioned into more of an advocate. So what I'm doing now is traveling around and giving talks on the subject at schools, conferences, you name it, and really trying to spread the word on how important food waste is and how it's not that difficult to actually make a dent in the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also doing a little bit of consulting work on the issue, trying to get businesses to think about how they can play a role. And then some larger organizations, more on the think tank front.
Right. Well, to get your research, I know you put yourself in positions of working in many different supermarkets and places of food. Now, how many supermarkets did you actually work in to do the research for this book?
Well, so I worked in a supermarket. I worked at a restaurant, a fast food restaurant. Worked on a small farm and for a catering company.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the direct experiences I had in the book research, but it also sort of calls on a lifetime of food observations and research in a more informal setting, both growing up and then as an adult, sort of navigating through life as a somewhat food-obsessed journalist.
Uh-huh.
But the supermarket experience was certainly the most eye-opening and the one that I think gives me the most hope for progress. There's simply so much excess built into the supermarket system, And so, you know, my first task that day at the store, I was working in the produce department, I showed up at 8 a.m., and before I even got my name tag, they pointed me to the wall of refrigerated bagged produce, those bagged salads and spinach and such that are so popular today. And basically had me start pulling things to throw away. And these were items that had reached their quote-unquote sell-by date,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't really speak to the condition of the food inside. It's just that, you know, the way they set up the systems, they have a date to help retailers know when to pull things off the shelf, but it's still perfectly edible at that point. So from day one, moment one, I was throwing away edible food at the supermarket.
Mm. Right. And
but
then
the reason I said, you know, that I was a bit hopeful, there's a chance to actually reform the system, and I think it's both approaching the idea of the whole amount of excess that stores have, but also in donating what you can't sell, that edible but unsellable food. And so by the end of my time at the supermarket, I had set them up with a nonprofit, and they were donating stuff two or three times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So most stores do that. Most stores donate some food, but the question is, what kinds of foods are they donating? And everyone wants to give their day-old bread and baked goods, but
right, because they feel like there's very little chance of spoilage, so their liability is low.
Exactly.
Right. The minute they get into the dairy and the meat, they're afraid of their liability risks.
Right. There is that fear, but the thing is, there's a Good Samaritan Act. So
right.
A federal Good Samaritan Act that would protect them from any liability when they give food that they, in good faith, say is in good shape.
Right.
So, you know, some stores may not know about that. Some may know about it and still just be a little bit leery of giving stuff that is quite perishable, like meats and produce. You know, when stores do want to donate and want to donate the healthy foods, they are completely protected, and they should be able to do that with knowing that they're protected.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear my story at the beginning of the show where I called Whole Foods from my car and went right over there and got their bread?
I did.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was so great because so often, you know, the person in charge is not given the authority to make a decision. And they feel like they have their hands tied, and they, you know, I think so much of the bureaucracy that's set up and built into our systems these days don't allow people to be normal human beings. They have to follow stupid
right.
rules, and they are afraid they'll lose their job if they break a rule. And, you know, so often, you know, they know it doesn't make sense to throw it out, especially if there's someone's right there who they want to give it to, and they, you know, corporate doesn't let them do it, you know.
Right. And it happens the other way as well, where, you know, the store manager just might not want to deal with the nonprofits because he or she might think it's a nuisance, or maybe they just don't think that that's a good practice. So I've heard it both directions. Sometimes, you know, the corporate says go talk to the store manager, and the store manager says talk to corporate.
Right.
But I think when there's common sense and when common sense prevails, this is edible food that people need, and it makes perfect sense to actually just donate it.
Mm,
I think the epitome, though, of the worst scenario in this whole genre is the kind of place that's basically putting blue dye on the foods that they throw out into the dumpster to make sure that no one takes food out of their trash. And to me, that is just so ridiculous.
It's vindictive, almost.
It is. It's mean-spirited. It's very Scrooge-like. And you know, the attitude that this is our trash and we are going to send it to the landfill. I don't quite understand that.
Right. Doesn't make sense. So what's the difference between loss and waste? You know, I hear some people talk about a loss and some people talk about waste. Are they essentially the same?
Well, there's a subtle difference. When you talk about loss, it implies things that happen for natural reasons things like weather-related loss of crops or maybe pests. When you speak about waste, it's food that isn't consumed for a human reason or a human decision that happened somewhere throughout the food chain that made it so that food wasn't to be eaten. So whether it's a farmer deciding that he or she isn't going to harvest that field because price doesn't justify harvesting, or a store throwing away a good amount of apples because they don't look quite right, even on to restaurants where you'll have a chef maybe order too much and then have too much inventory on hand. And then at the household level, well, you know, there's a whole number of reasons where we get ourselves into trouble with not eating food. But yeah, mm-hmm. there's some culpability with waste.
Right, right. Like I know, you know, you have an electrical outage, you know, that would be loss then, right? If you're going to lose everything because you have no electricity, no power, as opposed to overstocking and that being waste.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Now, you mentioned in the beginning of your book, green fatigue, you know, the pressure that people have to, like, pick the right light bulb
yeah.
or using too much gas, getting, you know, need to get that Prius. Do you think avoiding waste, food waste, is another example, you know, of pressure from society to go green, or should it be consistent, you know, a consistent habit for everyone to do always?
Well, there are three real factors in why we shouldn't waste food. There's the environmental issues that you hint at with the green fatigue, but there's also the straight economic factor of saving money. This is food you purchased, so why wouldn't you want to use all of it? And then there's the ethical dimension as well, the idea that when so many people are struggling to find enough to eat, you have this abundance in your refrigerator. I think there's a moral imperative to make a good effort to use pretty much everything, or at least mm-hmm. to try. So if people are feeling that green fatigue, I can have a couple of other avenues from which to try to coerce them to actually use all their food. But with green fatigue, the one thing that pops to mind is sometimes I tell people when I'm talking about tips to give, I tell people to make smaller, more frequent shopping trips. Then you run into the question of, well, is that using more gas, you know, to get to and from the store every other day or every day? Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I guess that also depends on
if
you're living in Vermont, where it's going to take you a half an hour
right.
to get to a store, or
exactly.
you know, you're out
yeah, you
and
know.
About and you're passing a store every day.
Right. So, you know, there's no one bit of advice that's good for everyone. I think people need to assess their own lives and situations, and
mm-hmm.
I'm confident everyone can come to a mature, sound decision on balancing everything. But
yeah.
but it can get a bit challenging, as you know.
Well, I know as a chef, one of my favorite things to do is to, like, see what I have in my house that I have to use up. Like, you know, I'm not one of these that plans my weekly meals ahead of time and go out and do shopping for all the different meals that I'm going to do. I do
yeah.
wing it a lot. And so it's, you know, what do I have
yeah,
in the refrigerator that's going to go bad if I don't use it? And so, you know, soups are a great way to use up stuff in the refrigerator.
That's like creating your own game show at home. You know, you sort of challenge yourself. Some people call that eating down the fridge.
Right.
Using what you have on hand. Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, and so wintertime is wonderful for soups. You know, juicing is also really great, you know, for vegetables. If you have too many and before they go bad, you know, juice them all, make a smoothie, something like that.
Yeah. I tend to do that with fruit, but that's a great use for things that are approaching their end of usefulness.
Right.
There's so many of those dishes. I call them the kind of kitchen sink dishes where you could just throw a little bit of everything in it and fine. So whether it's a quiche or a casserole or burrata
mm-hmm.
or in my house, burritos tend to be the catch-all.
Right,
dinner.
I was just thinking that, yeah. You can throw a lot in a burrito. Absolutely.
Sure.
Believe it or not, I actually I throw a lot inside nori as well and make nori rolls with lots of different leftovers.
That's an interesting use.
And it's really great, you know. It's like you get the seaweed in there, which, you know, wasn't going to go bad, but, you know, I put my leftover stir fry in there, my leftover, you know, noodle vegetable thing in there and roll it up, and it's really great.
Yeah, and I've heard of some parents with some finicky eaters as for their kids blending or pureeing those vegetables and hiding that in the sauce on the pasta or something like that. But, yeah, who knows? And you don't have to. You could be using that half of a zucchini you have lying around. It doesn't have to be things you buy for that purpose.
Right, absolutely. Now, is there a way that we can address some of the food waste that we, you know, have in this country in the upcoming Farm Bill?
Certainly, yeah. So on a larger level, I'd love to see the idea of food recovery written into that Farm Bill.
Has it ever been before or no?
Well, not specifically in the Farm Bill, but I'd love to see something as simple as if you take subsidies, then having those farms be required to harvest all that they grow. So much of what is grown just ends up being plowed under, which is better than being thrown away, but so many resources go into growing that food, it just doesn't make much sense. If we could harness that food and these would be donations from these farms would certainly have tax benefits, so there's some incentive for farmers to donate, but if we could make it a bit mandatory, that would certainly help. Another legislative idea I'd love to see pushed through is just to ban organic waste from the landfill, so food and other sorts of plant matter, making it illegal to send that to a landfill. And it sounds a bit outrageous or difficult to pull off, but it's happened in a few countries in Europe, and they've done it in some provinces in Canada. So I think that one step would have a massive impact and a ripple effect throughout the food chain in terms of how we treat our food, but then also how we handle the excess that occurs. And there always will be some.
What would you suggest with that excess? Then there would be a separate, yes, it would be wonderful if everybody composted their own, but would there be a separate?
It would put pressure on municipalities to compost or to create anaerobic digestion systems or waste-to-energy schemes. Those two ideas are fabulous, but they have a difficult path competing with landfills, given how inexpensive it is in many parts of the country to throw things away. So I think there's room for government to step in and make the playing field a bit more competitive when you think about having these beneficial approaches to food waste compared with just the age-old dig a hole in the ground and throw it in it.
Right. Also, I think if we started charging people for their garbage, for garbage pickup, you know, you pay per bag, I think people would tend to want to throw away less if they, you know, if it was going to cost them more money.
Yeah, definitely. A pay-as-you-throw scheme that would definitely encourage people to be a little smarter about how they approach food and how much food waste they create. I've seen a couple of places where they've instituted municipal composting. What they've done is cut back on regular trash pickup so that it really gets people to focus on composting every week, and then the trash pickup is every other week. So that really encourages people to separate out their food waste and to participate in that curbside composting.
Those are great ideas. Jonathan, I need to take a couple-minute break so we can hear some PRN specials, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, okay?
Sounds great.
Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. And my guest today is Jonathan Bloom, author of American Wasteland, and the author or the blogger of Wasted Food. Jonathan, are you with us?
I'm here.
Great. So another thing I wanted to ask you is, with the holiday season coming up, do you have any suggestions for people to of ways that they can avoid waste?
Yeah, definitely. I guess my overall suggestion would be to try to prepare a little bit less than you think you might need, given that at the end of most holidays that I've seen or been involved with, there's just a massive amount of stuff left over. And that's probably, well, a little more useful on Thanksgiving, when we have the fabulous invention of the leftover sandwich. But around the holidays, just trying to dial it down a little bit might make sense. And how do you do that? A couple ideas. One would be really getting a good sense of how many guests you'll have, and just thinking about how much people would actually eat, and thinking about what happened last year, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, when you do have that food and it's time to serve folks, don't give people too much. Don't overserve your family or friends. Maybe have a buffet set up, or let people serve themselves family style. I know that, you know, it's coming from a good place where we want to show love through food. I call that the good provider syndrome, where we want to be the good provider, but you're not doing anyone any favors by putting 1,500 calories on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, when there are leftovers, and there always are, being proactive with those leftovers. So redistributing them, giving them to folks, passing out some leftovers as people are leaving. It's a nice way to share the love and the leftovers. And then when you do have that refrigerator full of leftovers the next day, trying to repurpose them and incorporate them into other meals.
Uh-huh. One thing that we started over in our community is something called From Our Table to Yours. And we did it through my local synagogue, but we collaborated with, I think there's a group of 12 different synagogues, and we put together a list of all the different food pantries, shelters, homeless shelters, as well as unwed mother shelters and halfway houses, all these different places that would take leftover food. And we distributed these lists to over 1,000 people within these 12 different synagogues. And so everyone has a list, so that when there's an event, whether it's a wedding, funeral, holiday gathering, when there's leftovers, people can call the different shelters, and they're all, you know, it's all listed by area, so you can find one that's closest to you and most convenient, and you can drive it over. And in the summer,
that sounds like a wonderful idea.
It's great. It's such a great service. And then in the summer, we have From Our Garden to Yours for the same thing. If you've grown too much of, you know, when all those cucumbers are coming in at once, all those zucchinis, you know, you can pass them around.
Zucchini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that really works.
Fabulous program. And there's a website, Ample Harvest, that helps people find that local food bank, mostly for homegrown garden abundance, when that sets in. So
what is it called?
It's called ampleharvest.org.
That's a good one to write down, everybody. Ampleharvest.org.
Yeah, very useful.
Uh-huh.
So it's great. It lets people, when they have that abundance from their garden, to pass it along, and lets people get food to people who need it, but it's also the right kinds of foods,
right,
like healthy, nutritious greens and other homegrown goodies.
Yeah, I think a lot of food pantries also have availability of volunteers, because I know sometimes I've spoken to farmers who just said, you know, they don't have the manpower to harvest the extra stuff to give away. It just would cost them too much money. but if they can get the volunteers. So, you know, I'm just putting it out there for any gardeners, farmers, people out there who would love to grow something for their local food pantry but don't feel like they can afford to harvest it. Very often if you call the local food pantries, they'll have people that are willing to volunteer, and they coordinate it and do that whole thing. So I have a friend that, you know, grows a whole row for a pantry. You know, I think they grew string beans the last couple of years. And
That's a great idea. There's a program, they call it the Grow a Row program. It sounds like you've had
I think that's what it is,
yeah. Yeah. But
right.
then less formal, there's the idea of gleaning, which is basically, well, a practice that dates back to biblical times. But these days, it looks like a group of volunteers going out into a field to harvest what the grower is not going to, and then mm-hmm. donating it to people who do need it. So that's a really fabulous practice. It's certainly something that volunteers can enjoy, getting out into the fresh air and getting out into that agrarian setting where you might not otherwise get a chance to go, but also doing it for a good cause.
Right.
Certainly the people who run those shelters and pantries who often have to serve canned or frozen vegetables, they're certainly pleased to get this fresh, local, healthy food.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, do you think there's a generational gap in people's attitudes towards food waste today? You know, like I know, you know, the people that grew up in the Depression, I mean, they didn't waste the way we waste now, you know?
Yeah. No, there certainly is. And in doing the research for American Wasteland, I would always talk to those folks who lived through the Depression or rationing in World War II, and invariably they had a different approach to food, and they really had a reverence for food that is impossible to replicate, or nearly impossible to replicate. But the children of that generation certainly had that same approach to a lesser extent. But what I found that's really fascinating is then the next generation, it's just so hard to pass that on. So we've lost some of that reverence for food. We're also so much further removed from our food. So that helps us, well, it makes it easier to throw away food, essentially, when you don't have a role in creating it, growing it, or cooking it, or what have you. It's just another commodity. And we live in a throwaway society, so why should food be any different, especially if it's not something that you have a role in creating?
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any change with the recession right now and the 99% movement and even just, you know, the whole locavore food movement that's happening now? Do you feel like some attitudes are changing towards food waste?
I think there's a hunger to save money with food. I think that can only help. And people are slowly starting to think about being more resourceful with what they have. There's a general trend of an increased attention to composting. But in terms of a wide-scale move to reduce food waste, I don't see a huge shift in that direction. We're getting there slowly, but I would have hoped that it would move a little quicker.
Right.
Some of the larger companies, some of the food retailers are starting to think about it through their organization. They just announced a plan to start a campaign to get larger retailers to reduce waste. But we're really just at the beginning. And I always compare the U.S. to what's happening in Europe, where there's much more of an emphasis on food waste reduction. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, we have some ground to make up. But I'll be keeping an eye on the Occupy movement, and I'm fascinated to see how food issues are incorporated into it or not, and whether there's any traction there.
Right. You know, I was wondering whether or not there's a way to also get restaurants on board. You know, I mean, I think the size portions, and, you know, we've talked about this in, you know, Super Size Me, or just so many restaurants today give such huge portions. I was doing some work with my food pantry that I'm involved with, and they had a nutritionist come to the food line one day when we were passing out groceries, and they were just showing by example, you know, what a Coke was 20 years ago compared to a Coke now, or a hamburger, whether it was from McDonald's or whatever, you know, before and now. You know, the size portions have gotten so big. Do you think there's any movement, especially because for a restaurant they could actually save money if they made the portions a little smaller? Because most people can't eat all the food they get.
Yeah, those portion sizes are such a real driver for waste. So there's some movement. There are a few chains that have started to offer what you could call a less food for less money. But it is a win-win. The restaurants are making a higher profit margin because it's not like half price for half the food. It's a little bit more than half price. And it's a good value for them. But then from the diner's perspective, you know, if you're not going to eat all that they give you, if you don't want that massive amount of food, then sure, let's go with the smaller plate.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime there's choice in portion size, I think that's a great thing. And it doesn't have to be any kind of revolutionary idea, even something as simple as the 6-inch versus 12-inch sub sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real easy solution. It'll also lead to healthier lifestyles and can address some of those obesity concerns where when we're given a healthier amount of food, you know, we won't be overeating and we won't be wasting quite as much.
Right. I know when I go to a restaurant, you know, there's different types of restaurants. You go to an Italian restaurant where, you know, you love going because you get this huge, big bowl of pasta, you know? Or if you go to a more, a higher-end restaurant, supposedly, you know, you might get everything plated very delicately, beautiful design, plated, and it's a lot less food. And yet I find by the time I'm finished, I'm just as satisfied because I eat that food slower. You know, when I get a big bowl of pasta, I kind of like, you know, people tend to scarf it down because you get it and you're just, you know, hungry and it's just, it's that vibe. And when you're in a restaurant that's really elegant and the food's delicate and, you know, you take little bites and you put the fork down in between bites and it seems to last longer and you end up just as satisfied.
Yeah, and you could do the same. You could eat slowly at that restaurant that gives you the massive bowl of pasta, too. And I think that would be a healthier approach. There have been studies that have found that it takes us about 20 minutes to realize that we're full.
Right.
When you scarf all that food down, you're sort of eating more than you probably want to, more than you should. So having a bit of a mindful approach to eating, really appreciating that food, that will lead to eating a healthier amount, not having as much waste, and you can always take that food home.
Mm-hmm. So, Jonathan, if people wanted to get in touch with you, what would be the best way? Through your blog?
Yeah, the best way is through the blog, wastedfood.com. There's a contact page right at the top there, and I'd love to hear different folks and have a bit of a conversation on how they see waste in their lives and ideas that they have to try to reduce it either in their home or elsewhere.
Wonderful. Well, Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show. It's been really so informative and the work you're doing is so important. So thank you
thanks.
You know, raising that awareness for everybody. And keep doing that work. And I hope our paths cross again real soon.
Me too. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. And everybody out there, I wish you all a wonderful, blessed rest of the week. Don't get too crazy with this holiday time. Have a wonderful holiday, whether it's Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa or whatever it is you choose to celebrate. Enjoy the festivities, the lights, the conviviality, and the good food. And don't waste it. Make sure you get any of that leftover food to people who need it. God bless you all. I'll see you next week.